Richard Grant explores Dawson City in the Yukon in the winter. He follows the trail of author Jack London when he tried his luck in the Klondike more than 120 years ago. And travel writer Dave Seminara tells us about the unusual people he met while exploring the margins of the Americas. That's coming up in just a bit. Let's start today's Travel with Rick Steves in Portugal. The architecture and the art of Portugal helps to tell the story of that small country squeezed between Spain and the Atlantic Ocean. You can wander through museums showcasing classical and romantic paintings, two styles with the largest impact on Portuguese painters. Or you can take in the beautiful blue azulejo tiles that ornament many of Portugal's buildings. To learn more about Portugal's art and architecture, we're joined in our studio by two Portuguese guides, Cristina Duarte and Rafael Pereira. Cristina and Rafael, thanks for joining us.
Obrigada.
Great to be here, Rick.
Cristina, so often to understand the art of a country, you need to understand its economy. There's money behind the art. How does money shape the art and the architecture of Portugal?
When you have money, you won't be surrounded by beautiful things. Actually, it's universal. Everybody wants to be surrounded by beautiful things. The thing is that you don't afford it many times. And when you afford them, you have them. And
so how did Portugal get so much money then? Because they have great art from 500 years ago.
Yes. Well, it is a combination of two major factors. The 1500s with the discoveries period that allowed us to have for the first time money enough for our trade with many places in the world. So automatically the royalty had money, the nobility had money, and the church had money. And the coincidence is that you have money and you have also religion behind it. So which is being a major Catholic country and thinking that you want to give your best and your beauty to your
to glorify God.
Exactly, to glorify God. So there were two kinds of ways of spending that money in art, which was the private, and that will be for palaces that nobody will see, and to God in churches. And I consider that public art.
So, Rafael, you have this money coming in from the trade. In fact, the churches were actually nicknamed spice churches. How does the spice tie into the building of churches?
Well, when Portugal arrived to places like India and China, and we started to bring all of these new products back to Portugal, they revolutionized Portugal. They revolutionized our economy. And from there on, the society started to change. And that is one of the interesting aspects of art, is that it reflects the other dimensions of society. So the spices, they were a major factor. Take, for example, the Jeronimo's Monastery that began to be built precisely with the money that came from the spices.
Which spices were these that were so valuable?
So you had pepper, you had cinnamon, and many others.
And Cristina, why would people spend so much money for pepper and cinnamon?
To preserve.
So before refrigeration.
Yes. Also, to pigments of any kind for linen or...
For dyeing, for color,
yes.
Yeah.
It was something exotic. It was different. People
never
seen it before. So imagine the first time you are smelling coffee, or you're tasting pepper, or you're smelling cinnamon. Imagine the impact that you had. Imagine how it sparked your imagination.
So the wealthy people would want this. It would be titillating for them. Now, you mentioned the monastery at Jeronimos in Belém, just outside of Lisbon, B-E-L-E-M, I believe, Belém. That was Manuelan-style architecture. What is Manuelan? Where does that word come from?
So the Manuelan style is named after our King Manuel. Actually, the name was given only in the 19th century during the Romantic period. But King Manuel, he was one of the most important kings during our age of exploration.
So he ruled from like the time of Columbus until 1520.
He began to rule in 1495 and then until the 1520s. In the 19th century, they figured out that we had several monuments throughout Portugal that shared the same characteristics.
So what are the characteristics? If you look at the front of a church, what will you see and you go, oh, that's Manuelan from 1520?
So the Manuelan is late Gothic style. So you have the basic structure of the Gothic. And then over that basic structure of the Gothic, you have a very specific decoration. You have, for example, maritime motifs. You have the strong heraldic of Manuel, especially with the armillary sphere.
So the coat of arms of the royal family, and then themes from the sea, because the money came from the sea.
Exactly, like the rope.
The rope, yeah.
The rope with a knot is a very, very important symbol of the Manuel line.
So that's something to remember when we go to Portugal, is Manuelan art, that sort of the connection of Gothic and Renaissance and the sea trade, and a celebration uniquely Portuguese from the reign of King Manuel. Cristina, we also think of tiles when we think of Portugal, these beautiful blue tiles. Tell us the name and very briefly how they make these tiles and what they mean to the Portuguese.
Azulejo.
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 Okay.
For many people that speak Latin languages, they think that azulejo comes from blue, but it isn't a coincidence. The word itself comes from azulejo, that means a square of vitrified ceramic. So it is a technique, an ancient technique that came from the Persians and went throughout till the western part of Europe and arrived to us on around the 12th to the 13th century. Although in the 16th century, an Italian found out a technique called majolica, and the technique was basically, instead of starting to paint and for the last firing with the glaze, we right now do the other way around. We do the glaze first, we paint overall, and then at last we fire the tile. So it becomes more resistant. The colors, they will change throughout what it is in vogue, and also the motifs. And when we see blue and white, we know that it is the Chinese influence of the Chinese.
Okay, so China was trendy,
yes.
And then they would decorate. And I remember even the beautiful church in Porto, the exterior is beautiful, azulejo tiles.
Exactly.
The train station in Porto, the palace in Sintra. Rafael, there's a single museum, I think, where you can see the best tiles. Tell us, if we want to see the best tiles in Portugal, where do we go?
Yes, the National Tile Museum. It is just 10 minutes drive from the city center in Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually in an old convent from the early 1500s. It has inside of the museum this amazing church that you can see while visiting the museum, and you basically can just follow the evolution of tiles throughout the history of Portugal. And keep in mind that we have been producing it and innovating with it and introducing our originality for 500 years.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're talking Portugal's art and architecture with Cristina Duarte and Rafael Pereira. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. And we have an email from Patrick in Long Beach. Patrick writes, "Get thee to the Gulbenkian Gardens and Fine Art Museum in Lisbon. If you're heading to Belém, check out the Horse Carriage Museum. Portugal is one of the power countries that colonized and collected the riches and is not known particularly for world-class art museums, but I would say the Gulbenkian really is a first-class museum. And even better, it has a relaxing and accessible feel that makes it easy and so much more enjoyable." Cristina, this is very interesting that Patrick recommends both the Gulbenkian Museum with its wonderful gardens and the Coach Museum out at the palace. First of all, the Coach Museum is the best coach museum I've seen anywhere in Europe.
It is the best in the world, because we have the best collection, but the best preserved collection in the world. The tendency for centuries and centuries was that on the 20th century you had other kind of power vehicles. You get rid of that. You dismantled that. The coaches, because they were pieces of artwork, so you will sell it by glass, you will sell it by the wood, you will sell it by the paintings.
And thank goodness the greatest coaches of the royal family and so on in Portugal survived, and they're like works of art on four wheels. It's
exactly.
An amazing story, and you'll see that when you go out to the Belém Monastery and the Monument
District,
to the Discoverers,
yes.
And so on. Also, we have an email from Ward in Winston-Salem, and that's in North Carolina. And Ward writes, "What's the best way to know and appreciate Lisbon's growing street art scene?" So, Rafael, that's a great question, because in Lisbon, I'm very impressed by just, you walk down the street and you see beautiful art. What's the best way to appreciate the crazy modern street art in Lisbon?
You know, street art is quite meaningful for me, because when I became a tour guide, it was precisely the moment in time when the city hall was reaching out to the graffiti communities and gave them specific places where they could actually go and perform their art. And it was an initiative done by the city hall with the objective of fighting vandalism by promoting the best quality street art. And the city benefits from it because you have ugly, dilapidated, gray, dark buildings transformed into beautiful murals.
Okay, so we'll put that on our list. We've got the Gulbenkian, we've got the beautiful tiles, and we've got the street art, and we've got the Manuelan architecture. You know, I'd like both of you just to close with your favorite artistic moment as you, as a tour guide, would share with one of your visitors. Christina, where would you take us?
To the Gulbenkian Museum and put people in front of a Rembrandt portrait of the old man. It's something that makes me almost cry when I look to that old man.
Okay,
eyes.
So for Portuguese art, you're going for the greatest yes. European art that happens to be in Lisbon. Raphael.
Well, I'm going to choose something that is not Portugal, but is universal. So in the mountainous northeast of Portugal, you have prehistorical rock art. So imagine the valley of this small river, which is actually a tributary of the Douro River. You have the biggest concentration of open-air rock art in the world. So you go there and you see these carvings in the stone. They depict mountain goats, they depict fish, they depict horses.
And this is long before there was a Portugal. How old is
this? This was 25,000 years ago. And why I think it's so magical is because you're looking at this art and you feel this tension inside of you, because on one hand, it's something that is very distant, it's something that is very primitive, it's something that tells you a story when humans were struggling, when they were very exposed to nature. But on the other hand, although it's so distant, you look at it and you see that it was a human hand that did it. So that takes experiencing art to a completely different level.
25,000 years ago, 50 times as far back as Columbus and Vasco da Gama.
It transcends our nationality, but it gives you an experience of what it is to be human.
Fantastic. Rafael Pereira, Christina Duarte, thank you so much for giving us a fascinating look at the art and the architecture of your beautiful country, Portugal.
Muito obrigada.
Thank you, Rick.
You can hear me describe my first encounter with Portugal's soulful fado music. It's in a program extra from my book, For the Love of Europe, that you'll find this week at ricksteves.com/radio. That's also where Raphael tells us more about the Gulbenkian Museum in Lisbon. Crazy travels from South America to the Yukon are just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.